You're listening to ESPN 100.3 FM, KLRZ, La Rose, New Orleans, and the River Region.
It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Hello, sports fans.
Well, hello there.
Local sports, national sports. The GCAT has got you covered.
Oh, you made a wise choice, my friend.
Time to tee it up and let it fly. It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Check it out, John.
It is Tuesday, May 7th. As always, we appreciate you for tuning us in. Welcome to the Sports Hangover. I'm Gus Kattengill with you. Hour one is always brought to you by No Wake Outfitters. Sure feels like fishy weather, I guess, out there. A little kayaks. I wonder if Jonathan over there has air conditioning or a fan to put up there. You know me. Anything above 65, I'm hot. I'm already counting the days till October. Not that I'm counting, but I am. Got a lot to get into today. It is Tuesday, which means we'll focus on baseball, in particular college baseball. Jay Ullman of the Tulane Green Wave will join us in the opening segment, as he always does. He is the leadoff man, bottom of the hour, Mike Silva, as Coach Blake Dean of the UNO Privateers normally joins us in that second segment. He's visiting some players. So we'll get a hold of him tomorrow as Tulane and UNO. We'll be playing a little baseball this afternoon, so we'll talk about that. Plus, with Coach Silva, we will talk with the Colonels winning another road series, a big road series for them, as they take care of business against UIW. So we'll definitely talk with him about setting up a very interesting final two weekends at home, both at home, to determine, really, the Southland Conference standings there as well. Coming up in hour number two, we'll continue some baseball talk. We'll take a look at the major league scene with Tim Grubbs at 1:30, 1:15, John Sigler of Saints Wire. We'll chat a little. St. Andres Pete cannot be a New Orleans Saint. They cannot sign him back because he has signed with the Raiders. So he cannot be a New Orleans Saint because of that. And we'll talk NBA playoffs to suspend or not to suspend. Did y'all watch the Denver game against Minnesota yesterday? First and foremost, how surprised are you that Minnesota is now up 2-0 in that series, A? And in B, what do you make of what happened last night with Jamal Murray, who, I don't know, by all accounts and indications, that he loses his mind? I mean, seriously, he throws a towel from the bench, comes up short of hitting the official that apparently he doesn't care for. A few minutes later, he throws a heat pack that actually makes it onto the court, and the Nugget has to throw it back towards the bench. Now, it was not seen, but the big discussion is before Game 3, which isn't all the way until Friday in Minnesota, is should they or should they not suspend Jamal Murray? As you can imagine, none other than the authority on what should be suspended or not, Draymond Green. He said this morning that in his podcast, I think last night he said it, that there's no suspension there. And he's like, why is everybody calling for suspensions? There's no reason to call for suspension. Although he does say it was dangerous, it was a dangerous play, and because of it, he just doesn't think, though, that, you know, there should be any suspensions on that. Crazy. We could talk about this, 800-998-1003 on the Ruderman Can caller and guest hotline, because, look, for starters, I don't know what level, right? I coach Little League. I haven't coached youth basketball. I've coached youth baseball. I've played in sports. You can't even look at an official in the NBA. As a matter of fact, in game one, Anthony Edwards got a technical foul for looking at a player. Oh yeah, Pels fans, I haven't forgot about you. We all know that in recent history and in recent times, yeah. Your New Orleans Pelicans, Herb Jones, remember he's gotten a technical for looking at players. Pelicans players have gotten technical fouls for far less. I legit can't see how you can't suspend him. Now, what's interesting is here we go again. like the Iowa game or any other game where you can't call that. You can't suspend him. He's a defending champ. The Nuggets need him. Like, what is this all? Like, it's so crazy, right? Rules, regulations, whatever. It either is or it isn't. Right? I mean, if you're waiting as an official to make a determination on if a player should be penalized in whatever way, shape, or form, a foul, a technical, a suspension, based on whether or not that player gives the team the benefit of the doubt or whatever, it's crazy. I'd have thought for sure Draymond Green, considering that he was suspended in the past, if you remember, in what I think turned an NBA Finals around. Him getting suspended. I'm not saying he didn't deserve it. The old basketball move to the groin in the Finals. But regardless, it's crazy to me, isn't it? You would think he would be the one that would say suspend him. Absolutely suspend him. So I'll take your phone calls on that 800-998-1003 in the Ruderman Can caller and guest line, because again, it is very, very interesting to say the least. Whether or not that should happen or not. In fact, you know, it is going to be our lead, whether it's this segment or next segment, as we try to get with Coach Buddy, and I appreciate you giving the effort. Look, there's a game tonight. They're busy and some things happen. If we can get them, great. If not, we will continue.
Time now for The Lead. The Lead. The Lead. The Lead. Here's what's topping our headlines on the Sports Hangover.
So, yeah, it is the toss heard around the league, at least from that standpoint, because, like I said, it is very interesting as to what you're going to do. If you suspend them, that is going to be a big advantage, obviously, for Minnesota. So we'll continue to talk about that here in a little bit, because that is it's a big question, right, for sure, especially in the postseason with what you have to do. SC, we have Jay Ullman on. As always, he leads off on Tuesdays. Coach, thank you for letting us bother you as we do on Tuesdays. Sir, how are you today?
Yes, I'm doing okay. Just going to the lakefront tonight, so looking forward to that.
No, I hear you, sir. Pelican Cup taking on UNO. We'll get to that here in a quick second. Since we last chatted with you, last Tuesday you guys took on Southeastern. You won 13-6. You win the season opener, a series opener against Memphis. And on Saturday you dropped 3-0, and then in 10 innings, in extra innings, unable to pull out the win as you lose 7-5. What do you make of the four games since we last chatted with you?
Yeah, I thought our Tuesday spin against Southeastern was, I thought it was a real good effort from top to bottom. I was real pleased with that, obviously, and good offensive output. And then Friday, you know, I thought scoring it up 9-5, mm-hmm. At one point we're up 9-2. I thought for the most part in my evaluation, I thought we were in total control, had a couple big innings and pitched Luke Flatta pitch really well. And then they mounted a little bit of a comeback, but we, you know, the fact that we extended the lead, we were able to, you know, win by four and win comfortably. And then Saturday shows up and, they had a guy on the mound that hadn't pitched all that great. And he gave us fits. He pitched really well and we didn't have any answers for him. 3-0 Chandler Wells pitched phenomenally, I thought. So an unfortunate, we got shut out and couldn't muster much against that arm. And then Sunday showed up and we got down 5-0 and had some opportunities we didn't take advantage of early, but ended up getting the game to extra innings. We actually had the bases loaded in the ninth, nobody out, and we hit into a double play that scored the tying run. And you know, in that spot for me, it was a pitch plan execution. You're looking for an elevated pitch, and I thought our hitter swung at the 0-0 pitch that was within that plan and took a good rip and fouled it back. He was ready to hit, and then probably got a little bit of the let me try to do more syndrome and swung at a pitch that was down below his knees and glanced off the pitcher's glove into the 1-6-4-3 double play, and then we didn't get a two out hit to win the game with Colin Tufte up. So went into extra innings and had our closer. They had their closer and had a leadoff double in the 10th. Tried to sacrifice a guy over. That didn't work for them. Guy got to two strikes and hit a homer. And then we mounted a comeback and got the winning run to the plate. We just didn't get it done. So kind of a unfortunate weekend that we would obviously love to have back, but we don't get that back. And that comes with, you know, the number five team in the country coming in into our park this weekend. But a quick spin over to the lakefront tonight first.
When I look back at that Saturday game, it's interesting when I look at just that stat line there with their starter, Seth Gardner. He gives up a hit and two walks. So I stopped there and I'm like, okay, so he was you know, dealing, I guess, up there. Just two strikeouts. Did you guys just put the ball in play a lot and they were just making plays on the field?
Yeah. And that's, you know, a little bit more inspection into it. That's exactly what happened. It was, we had quite a few walks and things of that nature. We had a lot of traffic. Unfortunately for us, our good at bats ended up finding a fielder or a glove for an out. We weren't able to kind of capitalize on some of the things that people we had in position. So it was kind of one of those things where I walked away from it going like, yeah, a guy with a 6 ERA beat us and, you know, pitched into the six or whatever. But at the same time, you know, he made pitches and sometimes the game just doesn't reward you, right? It's just one of those things, as you know, as a coach. So it was one of those deals where it was kind of just a, hey, we had some atom balls, we pitched well, we played defense. They just happened to get three runs and we didn't get any runs, you know. So I kind of chalked that up to kind of the game being the game.
Yeah. No, and that's why I asked about that, because I know there's a lot of times that we've talked during the season where, you know, you're trying to do too much or not having the good at-bats. It's one of those things where it's baseball, you know. And same thing, not the same thing, but I can feel you. Yesterday, two innings, I had runners on first and second, and we get two outs put out at third. I haven't seen two pitcher to third baseman put outs ever, and we couldn't score. So I feel you. Look, along those lines, though, and you kind of said it, you're spinning out there to Lakefront. You have to flush that, right? Because as you said, you got ECU coming up. And look, you know all too well that the Pelinky Cup means something to these two schools.
Yeah, no doubt. And you do. It's that's one of the good and tough things about baseball is, you know, you invest so much and the hours are long. You know, it's a 7-8 hour day at the ballpark and, you know, you invest and you lose. It hurts and you don't feel real good and nothing tastes good and you don't feel like talking or any of those kind of things. But you got to be able to pick yourself up and have self-motivation and self-leadership and get up and get off the deck and knowing that tomorrow is a different day and you got a new opportunity. And, you know, you could win big and turn around and lose the next day too. So there's always that responsibility to kind of behave in the midline. And, you know, the game really prefers that you operate at a consistent level, whether you're doing well or doing poorly. You got to keep your ego in check when you're doing good and keep working. And you got to believe you're the best in the business when it doesn't work out your way. You got to do that, you know. And so spinning over to, you know, UNO tonight, you know, we have a lot to play for. It could be our eighth win in the state of Louisiana for the year. We set a goal of, you know, having a 700 winning percentage against teams in the boot. We win tonight, we'll accomplish that. And we will also have the added bonus of being able to be in position to sweep our crosstown rivals. So there's a lot to play for tonight that way. And then obviously to get off to a good start for the week before we head into the weekend.
Yeah, no doubt. Nothing better than to get that taste out of your mouth and get a W under you. Wins are always nice, Coach. Always, appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining us on Tuesdays.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you. Have a great week.
Yeah, for sure. Mr. Jay Ullman, head coach of the Tulane Green Wave. They take on UNO tonight at 6:30 over there at Maestri Field, the Privateers. We'll speak with Coach Blake Dean tomorrow. Coming off of a weekend series at Southeastern, this is the stretch, if you remember, with UNO, where they're on the road a lot. They were at Southern Miss last Tuesday, at Southeastern. They're home tonight. They're at Northwestern State, at Southern, and they finally come back and host Lamar for a weekend series, but that's not all the way till May 16th. So kind of a little bit of a strange part of that schedule for them as they're being tested. But again, they're coming off of a series win, Tulane coming off of a disappointing series lost, and now they play tonight at 6:30, so we'll see what happens there. Thanks to Coach Ullman. Hour one is brought to you by No Wake Outfitters, your one-stop shop for all things fly fishing on the Gulf Coast. And yes, the kayaks. Incredible kayaks over there. 1926 Airline Drive. Gus, where is that? It's across from Premier Fitness. Catty Corner from the big furniture store you got there. It's between Causeway and the Parish Line, heading towards downtown, if you know what I'm talking about. On the right side, train track side of Airline Highway or Drive, whatever it is it's called now. I think it's Airline Drive now, huh? I don't know. Regardless, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll go back to what the lead was, and that is to suspend or not to suspend. I've never seen anything like it. The amount of people, though, they're defending, including Draymond Green, it's not a suspendable act. You threw things, not once, twice, at an official. I there is no gray area here to me. That's me. Love to get your opinion on it on the Ruderman Can caller and guest hotline, 800-998-1003. It's a Sports Hangover on ESPN New Orleans.
Oh, big talker, ain't you?
A man that likes to talk.
Now, back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill on ESPN 100.3 FM and ESPN 1003.com.
Our lead brought to you by Lakeview Massage and Therapy and Upper Cervical Family Chiropractic, the good doctor, Josh Roulette. Looking forward to maybe having a little happy hour on a Friday. We did that way back at the beginning of the season. Hadn't seen Josh other than when he's working since then. Now that the season's over, unfortunately. We'll get a chance to chat a little bit about that here a little bit. But again, if you didn't see this, it's everywhere. So not once but twice, Jamal Murray, who didn't have a good game yesterday, as people would say, he's been frustrated by the Minnesota defense, which is incredible. 106-80 was the final. Denver was held to 20 points in the first quarter, 15 in the second quarter. This wasn't a game. Like, legit, wasn't a game from the get-go. And Murray was held to 8 points. He was 3 of 18 shooting, 0 for 4 from distance. Now, he did have 13 rebounds, but yeah, he didn't have a good game. So anyway, he's on the bench, and I believe it's Mark Davis, I think, is the official. I guess he didn't care for him, thought he was getting fouled. Whatever the reason, a towel from the far left side of the bench, as you're looking at it on your TV screen behind the basket, he's on the far end, right? He decides that you see a towel come. Now, it lands shy of the officials on the baseline. Towel boy sees it, grabs it, moves it. A couple possessions later, a heat pad, a little heavier. He launches that. That actually makes it onto the floor, about 2-3 feet past the baseline towards the right block of the paint. A Nuggets player sees it, grabs it, throws it back towards the Nuggets bench. Again, if a fan throws anything onto the court, what happens to him? You know, adios muchachoed. If you're a season ticket holder, you likely might even get your tickets taken. I mean, like, you can't do that. I've never seen that I can think of where, you know, sometimes you get heated, blood boils when it comes to players. They may kind of go after each other. But again, you just look at this season, Jose Alvarado, you know, getting into it, and he gets suspended with the Heat player. I mean, there were suspensions and ejections and technical fouls. Now, after the game, the problem was this. No one saw it, apparently, the officiating crew. No one saw it. No one saw it. Chris Finch, head coach of the T-Wolves.
Well, I didn't actually see it happen, but when it was explained to me, you know, the referees didn't see it either, so they're not able to issue a technical unless they see it. We tried to impress upon them that there probably aren't many fans in the building that have a heat pack, so it probably had to come from the bench, which they found logical. But, yeah, it's inexcusable and dangerous, And, you know, I'm sure it was just a mistake and an oversight. I'm sure there was nothing intentional by the officiating at all, but certainly can't allow that to happen.
All right. So, again, he didn't see it, but obviously he's like, look, something, I mean, it's, you would think, is coming. Jay Will on ESPN's First Take this morning.
I feel like he should be suspended for a game. That was an inch away from Karl Anthony Towns planting his right foot right on that thing. That could have hurt him. He could have been out of the game. I understand it's not precedent, but I think that was such an immature move by Jamal Murray, and that could have been a really hurtful, nasty thing to happen to Karl Anthony Towns.
I'll be shocked if he's not.
So, again, that's Jay Will. Brian Windhorst, what's likely to happen?
After the game, Mark Davis, the lead official, one of the best officials in the NBA, says they didn't call it because they didn't see it. Now, it's coming from behind the bench. I don't blame them for not seeing it. So the question is, well, what is the penalty? And had they seen Jamal Murray throw this, Mark Davis, on the record, says they would have been a technical foul, not an ejection. Now, I do believe he's facing a fine here, and I don't know what to do about the incident with throwing the towel, because now you got a player throwing multiple things at an official. By the way, Chris Finch said after the game that this was dangerous. He's right. Most of the penalties in the NBA are for players throwing things off the court.
Right.
It's an immediate ejection if you throw it off the court. But I don't know the precedent for throwing stuff on the court. It never happens.
Exactly. But that's my point, though. If throwing something from the court off the court, like everyone, right, a couple games ago over the weekend, we saw Pat Bev throw a basketball at a female fan, ask for it back, and then throw it back at her again. Everyone's like, that's a suspension next season. Look, regardless if he was just, I don't know, angry and just tossed it on the floor, that's at least a fine, probably a suspension. He threw it at an official. I'm dumbfounded. Threw it at an official. Like, this is not difficult. Now, I was listening to National Radio this morning on ESPN, and they said the league has come out and said, well, the first step is they're going to interview Jamal Murray. How's that question go? What's the first question? Hey, Jamal, how's he going? Yeah, great. Thanks for joining us on this FaceTime. What are you doing, bro? what's the plausible explanation here? Was he oh, that's a bad call, kind of doing that, and it slipped out of your hand? You might be able to lie your way into that the first time. When two objects leave your hand in the direction of said official, I just legitimately don't know how you don't. Am I wrong? 800-998-1003 on the Rude Man Can Caller or Guest Line. I'm almost thinking is it a two game suspension, one per item. I mean, what does a fine do to multimillionaires? What does a fine do? The guy threw something at an official. I think it's a suspension if he throws it at a player from the bench. You know what I feel? There's a reason me and Devin Booker, well, not that he knows who I am, but go back to the Sun series from a couple of years ago when CJ McCollum's in that left wing, or left corner, rather, trying to throw, you know, shoot a three, and he grabs him. He's in street clothes. That should have been a technical foul minimum. That's a fine. You can't grab it, but you're in street clothes. It doesn't even matter if you can't off the bench grab a player on the court. By the way, nothing happened. But it's crazy the amount of people actually heard this morning, and not just that, looking at comments on social media. It's no big deal. Really? Look, they're going with the whole dangerous thing, and it is true. I mean, you're not thinking when you're going for a board, or I'm planting and I'm trying to spin on the baseline, or I'm going to put up that I'm going to land either on a towel or a heat pad that he threw. So there is a predicament, danger factor. But again, I can't get past just the initial thing. Because nobody's come out and said, oh, it was towards Karl-Anthony Towns. Oh, it was to Anthony Edwards. He'd had enough of him. No, it was the official. Like everyone's saying, it was towards the official. And if you look at the video, based on the facial expressions, he meant to do it. You can see him jawing, saying something, and here comes the towel. You can see him saying something, jawing. Here comes the heat pad. The first one was too light. Couldn't get there. I mean, what did you think was going to happen? I'm dumbfounded. Like this doesn't take days of investigation. I'm like, did he just throw something at the fit? Yeah. See you game three, minimum. Right? Am I wrong on that? And then I love Draymond Green. Draymond Green says, "Oh well, you know, it was dangerous, but there's no need for suspension." Screaming A.
I hope that he isn't suspended because I'm very fond of Jamal Murray, but that's not what this is about. This is about the fact that he committed an act that even Draymond Green himself concedes could have been very, very dangerous. That warrants a suspension for a game, or at the very least, a very, very stiff fine. Now, I can understand Draymond Green that not coming to his mind. Why would it? Of course you would feel that way. You're a player, first of all, a champion, second of all, but third and most importantly, you've had your share of suspensions, and some you might have deemed unfair. So, of course, you would feel that way. But that's why you have neutral eyes looking at this, not somebody jaded by being a participant in the profession and would be more prone to exercising a level of leniency towards one of their contemporaries. Jamal Murray, throughout his career, has been class personified. He has never done anything, as far as I can remember, legs, that he doesn't deserve to be criticized, besmirched, or anything in terms of his character as a person, as a man, as a professional. He's never done anything wrong. We're only talking about this incident and what this incident warrants based on its seriousness. Well, let's crystallize that. If you throw a heating pad on the floor, all right, you've endangered other players. Somebody could have tripped, they could have slipped, they could have twisted their ankles. We see people doing that all the time. That's number one. Number two, you were throwing it at the official.
Right.
Well, you know that's not good. You know the NBA don't want you doing that. So you're doing that. Number three, you're doing it because y'all were getting your ass kicked.
Yeah.
Okay? And there's no way around that. And so taking those things into consideration, I don't wish for it for him because he's not some repeat offender. He's right. And if somebody says, well, guess what? You know what? Give him a pass here because that's very uncharacteristic, out of character for him. I'm down for that. But strictly looking at the incident itself, if the NBA said, oh, you can't do that, you ain't playing next game, what would any of us really, really be able to say?
I think the thing that's also interesting to me is when you look at what he just said, too. I get that that's not his, you know, character, and that's what he does. And I no one's ever recalled Brian Windhorst. I can't recall a player throwing something on the court, much less at an official. I mean, that's the thing. Again, as we go to break, you can't even comment on the officiating in a certain manner, or you will be fined in postgame. Like Zion, Herb, Willie Green. I'm not going to talk about the officiate because they get fined. The NBA doesn't want you talking about it. A player threw not one, but two things at an official. I have no idea how you can. That's me. Love to get your opinion on it. Next open segment will be at 12:45. We'll take your phone calls then on the Ruderman Can Caller and Guest Hotline. When we come back, though, Mike Silva, head coach of your Colonel baseball program, they're coming off of another road series win, something they've done, well, pretty much every single time in league play. We'll talk about that when we come back. It's a Sports Hangover on ESPN New Orleans.
Adventure, intrigue, mystery, romance.
It's a storm of entertainment that brings down the house.
Now, back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill on ESPN 100.3 FM and ESPN 1003.com.
It is Tuesday, which means it's time to talk a little college baseball. Thanks to Jay Ullman, who joins us at the top of the hour. He's the leadoff hitter in the three-hole, Coach Mike Silver. What's up, sir? How are you doing today?
What's up, Gus? I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I like this, man. Talking about a series win with you as you go to UIW, take care of business there. You come back down 6-0 to win 10-7. And more importantly, just overall, winning that road series, you guys have won every single road series in conference play. Is that right?
Yeah, it's crazy, right? Yeah, we have. It's probably the first time in my career I've ever done that. Really proud of our kids. And, you know, doing that put us in a position these last two weekends. We have a shot. So excited to be at this point in the season playing meaningful games.
We talked last Tuesday. You said you had to take on a Southern team that, hey, gave LSU fits to beat them. 12-4, you win last Tuesday. How happy were you to be able to, I guess, you know, come off of a bye weekend and get a win after two straight losses?
Yeah, it was important, you know. We didn't start out the game well. We were down 3-0 early and came back. I guess that was kind of the theme for us the whole week. So, yeah, it's good to get a win before we hit the road.
Hey, so you hit the road. You go up there to UIW, and you jump out to the lead, right, a little bit, and then you wind up losing 7-6. What were your thoughts on Friday night?
I mean, I thought our kids played hard. They were into it. I liked the look in our eye. I liked our vibe. I mean, they're invested in this thing. It just didn't go our way. We got a bad start, and you know, Jacob struck out five of the first six guys, and we thought, okay, here we go. We're off to the races. Their Friday and Saturday starters were excellent, and so we figured it was going to be a battle. And honestly, they don't lose very often at home, so you know, we knew it was going to be challenging. It didn't go our way, but our kids kind of bounced right back. And then, you know, we didn't get good starts all weekend. Our bullpen really stepped up. And then offensively, we just chipped away and really just made some really good defensive plays. I mean, it's that time of year where I feel like guys take a step forward, and we had guys diving into walls and laying out, and just selling out for their teammates. And that's, you know, when you do that, that gives you a chance every day. And, you know, I really thought that was a difference in the series.
Being able to come back on the next 2 days and get the job done, a lot of it is just what you've been saying, right? Especially on a one-run game. You come back on Saturday, you lose 7-6, you come back and win 7-6. What was the difference in Saturday's game, you think?
Well, Nico Saltafamaggio out of the bullpen went 7-3, punched out 8. we had to go to the bullpen again in the second inning, and you know, you're not really feeling great about it then, and he had his best outing of the year, and then your best players have to play their best this time of year. And Edgar Alvarez hit a one-out, three-run homer in the ninth to dead center to put us ahead. And, you know, I felt like we carried that momentum, even though we went down big on Sunday. I thought we carried that momentum from coming back into Sunday's game. And you know, that was a pretty gutsy performance by our kids. And then Devin DeSandro, same thing. In the third, we didn't get good starts, and Devin DeSandro came out and took us home. I mean, it was his best outing of the year as well. And so, obviously excited to see it out of the pen this time of year, but obviously want to get better starts.
Man, did you think it was gone off the bat there at the top of the ninth? And more importantly, when
he hit it about as good as he can. There was really no question. It was just how far it was going to go out. Mm-hmm. So, special moment for him. He was really having a tough day. He was 0-4 and really having bad at-bats. He was just struggling, trying to do a little bit too much. But he's such a mature kid, and he's our best player. And, you know, I didn't know if they'd pitch to him. And I know it would have been gutsy to put him on, and then, you know, you put the winner on all of the time on second. Yeah. But they pitched to him, the 3-1 count. You know, he had a special moment he'll probably remember for a long time.
Then you get to Sunday, and four runs in the first, two in the second. Here we go again, right?
Just how he drew it up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you make it interesting. I'll tell you, I have to stick around.
Yeah, my cardiologist would disagree, but yeah, it's it's not exactly the way you want to start. But again, there was really no panic in our dugout. I thought our kids did a really good job. Just literally, and it's cliche, they just kind of took it one pitch at a time, and you know, they created an inning for us. Garrett Felix hit a double, and when it got to 6-3, you could really feel the momentum change. And then Basil Williams ran into the wall, made a catch, and. Mm-hmm. And then Edgar Alvarez laid out on like a Superman catch. And when that happened, you kind of felt the wind go out of their sails, and our kids kind of felt it. And then we were able to get the job done, which was huge.
I probably think here that one of the reasons you guys have that confidence and stuff is kind of something we've talked about
beginning of the season, going into the season, right? You've had guys that have been there before. You've had guys that have been in ninth inning games. You have guys that have won, have lost in close games. So I guess it's easier to not panic and to know you can still win when you have guys that have played so many innings for you.
Yeah, and I felt like early in the season we were running from it a little bit, you know, all the expectations and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, hate to say it, but then kind of going in the underdog role again, our kids are really pretty comfortable in that situation. And I mean, I'm not saying that's a good thing, but it kind of is what it is at this point. And so going into this weekend, the same thing. Got Lamar coming in, and my God, you look at their numbers offensively, defensively, on the mound. I mean, everything's stacked against us, but I would be really surprised if we don't play well. I mean, we're going home, and we, like, the goal was to get home the last two weekends with a chance, right?
Mm-hmm.
We did that, and it was 11-1 on the road. We had to go in conference to get to that point. But hats off to our players. And the other thing is, too, and you know this, you know, you cover so many teams, like, these guys really care about each other, and they really care about our university, and they're very proud of what they've really built this place back. It's, you know, I get all the credit for it, but really it always comes down to players. I don't throw a pitch or get a hit or, you know, I'm not out there limping around playing with injuries and stuff like some of these guys are. And so, you know, a lot of these guys, especially these seniors that we've been together for 3 years, they don't, you know, they want to keep this thing going and at least carry some momentum into the postseason. And you saw it these last 2 weekends, just the way how locked in they are as far as trying to get this thing done. And so happy for them. And it's going to be a lot of fun. I don't know if we get done or not. That's why they play the games. And if I knew that, they'd pay me a lot more money. But, you know, Gus, these guys are, I know this, they're going to lay it on the line for each other. And it's going to be a lot of fun down the stretch.
So you look at the baseball standings there in conference play. Lamar 14-4. You guys are 12-5. That's coming up this weekend, but you're still in the state of Texas as you're in Houston tonight to take on the Cougars. Can you tell us about the Cougars tonight?
I mean, they're good. I know the record in Big 12 play isn't great, but you look at what they've done outside of conference. I mean, they have a lot of high leverage, really good stuff guys on the mound, and a handful of guys in their lineup that can really hurt you. So it's going to be a challenging, you know, tonight, especially with us blowing the bullpen this weekend. But we're starting mm-hmm. Sam Hill tonight. Now, Sam's had some tough outings for us. He's had some really good ones, too, and we need to take a step forward moving into the postseason. So excited to see him go out there and pitch, and then some of the other guys step up out of the bullpen, see if we can't get one before we head home.
One of the things, Coach, as well, too, like you know, I'm not going to talk to you again until after the series, so I'm asking about Lamar. Like, what have they done this season to put them on top just, you know, by a game or so of in terms of where you are?
Yeah, I mean, they're pitching. Just look at the pitching numbers. I mean, they and they're so athletic, and they don't give you anything defensively. And then on the offensive side, I mean, they can really beat you any way you want. I mean, I was looking at it. I mean, I'm not going to tell you. I hadn't looked ahead. That's what my main focus has been since we got done with UIW. And you don't really see a weakness. I mean, honestly, like, I think they're good up the middle. They can really run across. They can execute the short game. They can steal bases. They get the ball out of the yard. I mean, and their pitching staff is by far, from a numbers standpoint, you know, the best in our league, and it's not mm-hmm. even close, one of the best in the country. But like I told our kids, like, this time of year, the numbers don't really matter. It's who plays the best on that particular day. But your body of work doesn't really matter. The fact that your body of work puts you in this position matters. Right. And so for us, in my opinion, just go out and literally take it one pitch at a time, one play at a time. And it's not necessarily the team that has the lowest ERA. It's the team that makes the most, you know, the best pitches on that particular night. And so I'll take our chances with these guys. Whether it happens or not, you know, I'll roll with these guys and take our chances.
Tell you what, Coach, just a quick little message, I guess, to the fans out there listening. The last two weekends, it's for all the marbles, and more importantly, it's at your home field. It's kind of what you want, isn't it?
Yeah. Look, to get to go back home with our people and our fans, and they've been a part of building this thing as well. And hopefully we can finish it off. And look, either way, it's going to be extremely entertaining baseball with a lot at stake. And this time of year, we feel really fortunate to be playing these type of games.
Coach, appreciate you joining us on a game day. Good luck tonight against Houston at 6:30. Appreciate the time.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot, man. Take care.
And for sure, GoCurdles.com is the way to go check out the school's athletic website, and Nichols BSB is the way to do so over on X and Twitter. Hour one is brought to you by No Wake Outfitters, your one-stop shop for all things fly fishing over on the Gulf Coast. 1926 Airline Drive in Metairie. Hard to believe there's just two weekends of baseball left when you look at pretty much everybody in and around the area. And obviously LSU baseball being able to come off that series win against Texas A&M. You know, it's crazy Look, Nichols is trying to win a conference title there. Tulane's trying to get hot to where they can go into the conference tournament and maybe do a repeat of what they did last year, win it, and get in. LSU's trying to get in a conference tournament. Now, obviously, being able to beat A&M yesterday, I mean, over the weekend, in the series helps, but it's crazy to think, isn't it? They're 9-15 in conference. They're just trying to get into the conference tournament. So you want to talk about how these weekends all come down? It's crazy. Pick a sport. It doesn't matter. Huh? With the Pels, one game. What was the difference of one game for them? The Saints. What was the difference of one game? They hold on and win that game at Green Bay. Just think about it. It's the difference of one game. What does it matter? So the fact that it literally comes down to two series for everybody that I'm talking about here, really, as LSU will be at Alabama over the weekend. And then they will have their final series at home against Ole Miss starting Thursday, May 16th. So you got Northwestern State tonight at the Box, and then you got Alabama over the weekend, and then nothing during the week, and on Thursday it's Ole Miss. And that's it. That's it until the conference tournament and the SEC tournament, which starts on the 21st and 26th. Again, it's not an official given, just that LSU's in there. So they have to win a couple of games and probably those two series to do so. So be interesting to see what happens there. Quick break. We come back. Phone lines are open on the Root of Man Can caller and guest line. Want to hear from you. Pels fans, NBA fans, anybody fans, sports fans. Like, what do you think should happen? Are people making not a big enough deal, a big enough deal? Should suspension happen? I don't know. I know, Wesley, I saw you officiating one of our Little League games, longtime Tulane supporter, one of the Greenbackers here as well. You're an umpire. Well, what if somebody throws a water bottle at you? Are you doing the heave-ho? Not that Carver would ever do that, Wesley. Not that Carver would ever do that. But, Jack, you're listening to me. What could you imagine? Somebody, a player, Alvin Kamara, I don't like the call. I'm going to throw something, a towel, at the near. I can't see how it's not a suspension. A towel, then a heat pad. Not one. Two objects thrown in the direction of an official. I don't care if you're the best player in the world. You can't do that, right? I don't know. There's a lot of people believe you'll just get a fine. And we'll see you Friday night, game three, for those ratings. It's crazy. Plus, we do got to talk about Anthony Edwards, what he's been doing. The last four games, 36 points, 40 points, 43 points, 27 points. Are we, and this is a big question here as well that people are talking about, are we legit in the Anthony Edwards era? Like, has the torch been passed? Does he have to win the title? Does he have to win the playoff series or two? I don't know. You tell me. There's a lot of people that are saying the torch has been passed. You don't have LeBron. You don't have Steph anymore. You don't have the old guard, the names going in. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I heard that this morning. It's a bad thing. This is 70s basketball because we're likely going to get a sixth different world champion in six straight years. And some are calling it terrible. They want the dynasty. Do you want a dynasty? Or do you like that every year it's a new team? Let's talk about it. It's the Sports Hangover on ESPN New Orleans. 800-998-1003. What do you think of what Anthony Edwards is doing? Mike Conley is on the Pat McAfee show on right now. I'll tell you what, there was a series of plays yesterday where Conley got the strip, lobbed it way out in front for Anthony Edwards to get. He just turned around, started yelling at his bench. He knew Ant-Man was going to dunk it. They're a fun team to watch. Fun team to watch. They're a physical team, and they have taken it up a notch. I was talking to Jamaican Offer, who the Pels pod with, and man, Nolly Kostel. I'm texting him last night during the game, like, man, Conley, what a difference he's made and helped, right? That veteran presence, that guy that's been there as well, can help with the ball handling, but also just help really with taking a bit of that pressure there, be able to do that and allowing Anthony Edwards to just go. And look, he made some plays yesterday. I'm telling you, he reminds you of Kobe. Both of them reminds you of MJ. Just really did. Defensively, because people forget that, right? Michael Jordan was a really good defensive player. Like all NBA. Like he was first team. really good. And you're seeing that right now. Now, again, does that mean, though, that we are what Chris Canty said this morning?
Is the beginning of the Ant-Man era. We are ushering in a new era in the NBA. And it's about Anthony Edwards right now and his greatness and how that permeates throughout this team. And it creates a quiet confidence in terms of how they go about their business. I know people don't want me to jump out of the window. And I know we try to temper expectations. It's shades of Michael Jordan.
Now, Roy, Miami Dolphins super fan slash Yankee fan slash Celtics fan, is texting me. It's Jason Tatum. Celtics are the best team in the NBA. And Jason Tatum is the face of the NBA. Let me ask y'all this. Why isn't that, like... And Roy, feel free to call in. Because it is interesting to me. I don't feel... Like, I feel like more people are talking about the Knicks and Jalen Brunson. You know what I'm saying? Is it just because they've had 50-plus wins and they're just so much better and it's basically a no-doubter? But I don't know, because I've heard this also nationally kind of be discussed and talked about as well. Star power. Like, do they relate? I don't know. I'm being honest. And I'm not saying I walk around in a see Anthony Edwards jerseys or something like that. But I don't know. I mean, I guess I saw a handful of Celtics fans, obviously, when Boston came in town and played them. You know, they were there. But it's not like the Lakers or something of that nature. I don't know. Is it just me? But I don't feel like Jason Tatum, like people around the league, if I go, hey, give me the top five players in the league. I think he is. And I think Brown is really good, too, as well. I mean, he's got a contract that's $500 million, 500 mil. But I'm just thinking, like, do y'all find that those two names or Jason Tatum's name comes up first when speaking of the face of the league? I'm not saying he isn't. I'm not saying he is. I'm just thinking, like, literally everyone's talking about Jalen Brunson. The Knicks haven't won anything. They haven't really gone as far consistently as the Celtics. But everyone is talking about him. Now, granted, you drop in 40-point games, you're pretty good. Brian Windhorst?
This is four consecutive 40-point games in the playoffs. That's historic stuff here. And I don't think the Pacers have an answer for him the way he can pressure the basket. Nobody that they put on him tonight was able to stay in front of him. And once he gets going downhill or he gets you on his hip or his back, you're not going to be able to stop him. He's just too good. He also got to the line 14 times tonight. That's what the Pacers got to clean up. They got to stop reaching on. They got to stop fouling him. And Rick Carlisle took the high road, and so did the Pacers tonight. They pointed out, hey, Josh Hart had 24. Dante DiVincenzo had 25. We may have to live with Brunson having games like this. Will they be able to live with it? I'm not sure, especially after losing the game they could have won here tonight.
Yeah, no doubt, especially when you take a look at the box score. The one thing that really stood out to me that I was surprised with last night in that game, Pacers and the Knicks, and there was some officiating issues there. The illegal screen that shouldn't have been an illegal screen. So we bring in Roy, Celtic fan, to kind of defend this guy here. Again, it's legit. I'm just trying to wonder here, but I was surprised. Halliburton had 6 points. Tyrese Halliburton had 6 points. He was 2 of 6. He only shot 6 shots. Like, the Pacers aren't winning if Halliburton takes 6 shots. Anyway, Roy, what do you think, man? I mean, I know you obviously are a Celtic fan. But give me your reasoning why you think Jason Tatum is the face of the NBA.
He's there consistently. He's been in a Eastern Conference Finals consistently since he's been in the league. I mean, he went up against, and the only person that was stopping him every time from going to the finals when he first started was LeBron until he left the East. You know, so he's consistently been there. He's just a consistent player. I mean. And he's good in his own way, but when we played him, you know, we beat him. I mean, and Jason Tatum dropped 45 on him. He dropped 45, Brown dropped 35 on him. We just an all-around team. We're an all-around good team. Jason, if you put it this way, when we played last year, when we came back and we beat we down 3-0 against Miami Heat, and we tied it up 3-3, as soon as Jason Tatum got hurt, within those 2 minutes, the game was over. You take Jason Tatum out the Celtics, we're done. We're totally done. You take Brown out, we still could probably win. But you take Jason Tatum out, that's a wrap. It's over. And he's a consistent player. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why Danny Ainge knew what he saw with him when he did that little trade with Philly. And even Kobe kept telling the Lakers to go after Jason Tatum, but they went after LaMelo Ball. And he was and Tatum was training with Kobe until he died. But I believe Jason Tatum is the face of the MVP. Nobody's really talking about the Celtics right now. I mean, they hyped on the Knicks right now. That's like the Knicks in the NBA, because they're doing good, they haven't done good in a while, is equivalent to the Lions in the NFL.
But I guess here's what I said. Chris talking about Canty, earlier this morning, he gave his top five, and he has Tatum in the top five in the playoffs and stuff like that. But I guess what I'm saying is, I guess my counter argument would be, then why is he not an MVP finalist this year? Like, it's Luka, it's Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, and Jokic. Those are the three finalists. There isn't a single Eastern Conference player that is a member of the three finalists for most valuable player. Like, if you're going to be the face of the league, you would think. Like, look, and Anthony Edwards isn't on there, and I was surprised by that. But do you think him not doing that kind of hurts the case of being the face of the league?
No, not really. It's because Tatum has always been a team player. He cares more about trying to get a championship than MVP, because that's an individual accolade. That's not really that doesn't make you like equivalent to your team. I mean, Jason's always been consistent. You know, he's been, last year he was in a MVP topic talk about it, but
I was surprised, Roy, to be honest with you. I mean, the Celtics are far and the best, had the most wins in the NBA. It wasn't even a contest in Eastern Conference before the All-Star break. I mean, the gap between first and second, I was shocked. I mean, I know Luka's good, but did you think he had an MVP season this year, right? Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, the Thunder, they were the number one seed in the West. I got it. Jokic, go ahead.
You got to look, when they vote for MVP, they look at how many points they average per game. Because you got to look at that. That's what they're looking at. They're looking at how many points they average per game. The only reason I think Jokic is in it, because he's averaging almost a triple-double a game, just like Russell Westbrook was doing. But they're only looking at Luka and Shea, because they're averaging like 35 points a game. They're averaging in the 30s. Tatum's averaging like 28, 29. But then you got his counterpoint averaging like 26. You got Brown averaging 26. So them two go together. So that's the only reason Luka is like, because he's averaging like top of the league in points. But you see what that gets you when you're just a one-dimension player, where if Shea Brown gets hurt, you know we can still win the championship, even if Brown gets hurt. But Jason Tatum gets hurt, we're done. That's it. You can wrap. Like, we still won. Like, Porzingis got hurt, and we still winning. Because we got Derrick White. Now Derrick White's playing good. He's the last two games, he's averaged like 26 points a game. So we have a good squad, and by us and Holiday helps us out a lot, because Holiday was good with the Pelicans. Holiday was the man with the Pelicans. So Holiday is a very good defensive player. So we have an all around good team. We have a good bench. We have a real good bench with Hauser and Peyton Pritchard and another, I forgot the other guy's name. But we have a good bench too. So we are all around team, but I think they just hyping up his the way Anthony Edwards is playing right now, the way he's playing to me, I see Jordan in him. You can see it. You can see the way he's doing the same thing Jordan's doing. Just the way his whole that dog mentality.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why everybody's talking about the Knicks too, because right. Last time I seen Knicks in the playoffs like this, when they played the Pacers, when Reggie Miller was playing. When it was Reggie Miller and
Brunson's playing something else, it's going to be fun to see. I think Knicks and Celtics could be it. Your series with the Cavs start tonight. We'll see what takes place there as see if Donovan Mitchell can get going there, as he scored 40-something points in a loss at Orlando in Game 6. Thank you, Roy, for the phone call and giving your take to why Jason Tatum is the face of the league. We'll throw that out there here as well. Naruto Man Can Caller and Guest Hotline, 800-998-1003.
Lots of chatter this morning. It's Anthony Edwards. His era is here. What do you think? And I got something on Pat Mahomes and the Saints next on ESPN Morning.